And now, 88.9 and 96.5 FM WDCR brings you The Cradle and the Convert. Join your hosts, Dave Slade and Mark Bartholomew, for a conversation about local issues with a Catholic perspective.
Hello, and welcome to The Cradle and the Convert. Thank you for inviting us into your home, car, or office, wherever you may be listening to the show today on your FM radio or live streaming at WDCRradio.com. I'm Dave Slade, The Cradle.
And I'm Mark Bartholomew, The Convert.
Mark, the first thing I want to do this morning is apologize to our listeners for a little technical problem last week with the interview of Andre Goodnight. You know, he was in California, and we were doing this on the phone. And we always ask our guests that are on the phone not to put it on speakerphone.
Right.
And I'm not sure that that's what happened, but it appeared.
It sounded like it.
Once in a while, if he turned away from the phone, it was garbled.
Right.
And his message was so great, I'm just sorry that I didn't quite get that right on the numbers. I got lots of dials and buzzers and stuff over here that I'm trying to work
But you know what, Dave? Each one of those is different, and sometimes the connection was good, but sometimes the audio just when it's coming over microwave, you know, it's
now here in the studio I could understand him
pretty
well. But it was my fault, and I take all the blame for that. So we did get a nice thank you note though from the publicist.
We did. That was really
she listened
nice.
To it on the podcast and thought it was okay.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess we're down to your last show before you go off to Florida, is that right?
Yeah, but I'm coming back.
Are you?
You know, I'll be back first
year. Can you call us and not on a speakerphone if we chat with you?
I'd have to use my cell phone, but I won't put it on speaker.
Well, Mark, I want to start the show for a minute or two talking about scams against the elderly or just anyone, you know, in general.
Exactly.
We're running a spot this week from the Elder Fraud Hotline and the state's attorney, Jay Scott.
Yes.
In which calls are being placed to residents of Macon County purporting that they've won money in the publisher's clearinghouse giveaway. And, you know, that's the one where they show up with the balloons and the big check and all that.
Video cameras, yeah.
The scammers tell folks that they've won a large cash prize in the PCH giveaway, but before they can collect any money, they have to pay a portion of the income tax on it and some handling fees. And, of course, you can do that real easily by going down to Walmart or Walgreens and getting a prepaid Visa card and calling them back with that number. And then, of course, they will forward you your large cash award.
Sure they will.
Right. But once you give them that number, your money's gone and you're not getting anything back. So there was a survey from studyfinds.org, that's a website, studyfinds.org, that 7 in 10 seniors have been targeted by fraud campaigns, and get this, 30% of that group's been victimized.
Yeah.
So, you know, here in Macon County, we've had the Yes Scam, where they say, hey, is this Mark Bartholomew? And you say, yes.
Yeah.
And at the end, they take that yes and insert it into a thing that says, would you like to buy our product for $49.99 a month? And you go, yes.
Yeah.
We've had the Microsoft Scam, which I personally fell for. It came on my computer and said I had a bug, and it was Microsoft, and it looked real to me.
Yep.
And I fell for it, and my son had to come back out and reset my computer and delete all that.
Yep.
So, I mean, it can happen to anybody.
Oh, yeah.
There's one going on that I know somebody else that has been scammed, and that is you get a phone call, and a young-sounding voice says, Grandpa?
Oh, yeah.
And immediately you say your grandchild's name. I'm in jail in Ohio for DUI, and I need $1,000 cash.
Or Mexico.
Yeah. Well, this one was Ohio, which sounds legit.
Sure.
And, of course, you just gave your grandson's name when you said the name, whatever it was. And they want you to send money to get him out of jail. Well, man, I mean, people come close to falling with that one.
Oh, yeah. And you know, there's always some deal about, you know, similar, calling from Canada and their sweepstakes. And you've just won a brand new Cadillac with all trimmed out with all the fixings, but you have to pay the tax on it to get it across.
The IRS scam.
Yep.
That's a big one. The jury duty scam.
Yep.
The parking ticket scam. So, folks, be careful out there, you know, and
makes
if you run into
something. Makes a person almost afraid to do anything.
Well, my mom won't even answer the phone if she doesn't know who it is, and that's good.
Yep,
that's good.
Exactly.
You know, so.
It absolutely is.
Things you can do, protections. I personally have LifeLock.
Oh, yeah.
To protect my credit.
Yep.
I have Credit Karma, which watches all my credit cards and my credit ratings, credit reporting services. And, folks, this is important. If you have official documents at home, don't throw them in the garbage. Get you a cheap shredder or watch for a day at the Farm Bureau or the county building where they're having a shred day. You need to shred official documents. Credit card applications that come in the mail.
Yeah.
If somebody picks one of those out of your garbage or even out of your mailbox, God forbid.
Yeah.
They can send in and change the address and get a credit card in your name.
Sure.
You know, medical and legal paperwork. Mark, the other day I found an old bill that I'd paid in a drawer that I was going to file and never did. And I thought, I'm just going to throw it away. And I looked at it. It had my Social Security number, my date of birth, my address, everything.
Oh, sure.
So, I mean, you know, with the Equifax hack and other recent hacks in years.
And listen, Dave, I was going to throw this in, but since you brought it up, the Equifax hack is far worse than was originally imagined. And one of our former compadres, Mike Buckley, who was a deputy chief from the department when he retired, is now putting on, he was a victim, and he is now putting on seminars for those that want more information.
I got an invitation
In
to
fact,
one of those,
there's one tomorrow night.
Friday night?
Or no, it's tonight. Glad you said that. It is tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
Yeah. And he points out everything you should be aware of and checking and how to mitigate your victim profile. And
I check my credit rating once a year. And there's a very easy Credit Karma app for your phone that every month will check and give you your credit score.
Yep.
So, and we can all be had. We can all be had.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, they almost got me. So, on today's show, we're going to talk to Mark about his new book, a great read for history and police buffs. Mark's put many years of research into this effort, and we're going to talk about it and tell you how to get your hands on the first volume and where a book signing will be held later today.
Yes,
right?
Indeed.
An
yes,
autographed copy. I've got one.
Hey, you do?
Yep, I read your book in three sittings.
Wow.
Honest to goodness, I loved it. Stay with us on the Cradle of the Convert locally on 88.9 or 96.5 or anywhere around the town or the world.
That's right.
Streaming on WDCRradio.com. And we're going to be back right after this.
Welcome to a place where healthcare goes beyond four walls, where friendships begin, where our family comes together to care for yours. At HSHS St. Mary's Hospital, you'll find outstanding physicians and some of the region's most advanced specialties. We're bringing it all together right here in Decatur, where something even better starts right now. HSHS St. Mary's Hospital and HSHS Medical Group, working together as part of Hospital Sisters Health System.
Would you like a special way to dedicate a birthday, anniversary, or perhaps a memory of a loved one? Consider WDCR's Dedicate a Day, where your tribute will be on the air. For just $88.90, it's a great way of saying, I'm thinking of you today, or I'm remembering you today. Please call WDCR at 464-1099 for more information on how you may dedicate a day. Well, I bet you haven't heard that song in a while.
A long time.
That is the theme song from Police Story, Joseph Wambaugh's television version of some of the stories in his books.
Yep.
A great author, an inspiration.
Oh, he was a great guy. He is.
His books and shows inspired me, really.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I always wanted to be a cop, but boy, they really made me want to be a cop.
Yeah. You know, they told it like it was, and they didn't leave out the practical jokes, the pranks they play on each other. They didn't leave out the gore. They didn't leave out the language. I mean, it just, as Pope John Paul said about Mel Gibson's Passion of Christ, it is what it was.
Yeah. Well, speaking of authors, being Joseph Wambaugh, one of our favorites, I have in my hand your first volume published of the History of the Decatur Police Department. It's actually called The History of the Decatur, Illinois Police Department, Volume 1, 1856 to 1899. Author Mark D. Barthelemy, Police Chief, chief of police retired. I had trouble saying that.
Chiefs of police.
Chiefs of police. Mark, this is an awesome, awesome volume. I love it.
Thank you.
And, you know, I know you've been working on this since probably the middle 90s.
That's about right.
I looked at that big binders that you had, and you finally have got it compiled into the first volume. And I've got to tell you, I think it's great.
Thank you, Dave.
Let me get some idea of how you went about taking all of this information and editing it and compiling it into this beautiful soft. This is a soft covered book.
Yep, keeps the cost down.
215 pages long, but like I said, I read it in three settings because I could put myself in the places in this book. It was awesome.
Sure. Well, that's one of the reasons that I felt compelled to share it, Dave. You know, I started off on this on a. It was a comical remark former police chief Jim Williams made my office one day about he wondered how many chiefs there'd been in the department. What number was he? And I shrugged. I said, who knows? He said, that's a good job for you. Find out. Well, at that time, I was in your former arena, the professional standards division. And I said, I just chuckled because it was tongue in cheek. On his part, but it triggered something in me. I mean, I wanted to know the answer to that. I mean, I wonder how many chiefs, you and I both, with your Uncle Jim, having been a captain and served all those years, and we had heard from his generation and cohorts when we were younger in the job about this chief before that. So I had a good idea from 1936 back. But not before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and when did the police department form? When was the first police department? And so it became a case to solve, and we can relate to this. I don't know if the listeners will be able to, but it was like a mystery, and I wanted to solve the case. And so you just basically, Dave, have to go back and do the old gumshoe detective work of consulting sources that might have information and interviewing them and then checking out those leads they give you through ideas, reaching out to the media for assistance, anybody with any information or genealogy in their family connected with Decatur Police Department. Do you have any information or anything written?
Now, Mark, when you did this research, I know there were a couple big sources.
Yes.
One was the Decatur Daily Republican, which was the newspaper prior to 1899.
Yes.
When the Daily Review, isn't that what it was called?
Yep.
The Decatur Daily Review became the newspaper.
Right.
Where did you find these archives and that kind of stuff?
Well, I was directed a couple of places. The first one was to the city clerk, because in the vault at the city, believe this or not, the city was incorporated into a city on January 7th of 1856. And that was in anticipation of the railroads coming, because in 1855, they had started laying the tracks, and we had 11 different railroad lines running into the city by that time, which linked us to Kansas City, to Indianapolis, to Chicago, to St. Louis.
Wow.
You know, we became a railroad hub. And the forefathers in the city had enough foresight to say, hey, you know, this place is going to grow. And of course, those working on the railroads, a lot of them were immigrants, which brought a diverse culture and lifestyle into Decatur. And they decided they liked the community, and they settled. They went to work for the railroads here in Decatur and didn't go on to build the tracks, clear, you know, the transcontinental. Mm-hmm. And so Decatur's population grew rapidly. And when that happens, people are people. You're going to have crime. You're going to have disorderly events, and you need protection. And so the city decided we better incorporate so we can have a law enforcement protection and a city government to guide us in expanding the city and preparing land for residential plotting and so on and so forth. And so the city did, after that date, really, really take off. But that meant to me, I learned that from the book in the library, History of Macon County, that in the first city marshal, who was the first police officer and the only police officer during the first year of incorporation, who he was and when he was appointed, and that was the day the city incorporated.
Now, Mark, let me get this straight. 1856, this was the cowboy days.
Oh, absolutely.
So this city marshal was kind of a Matt Dillon sort of
guy.
Oh,
absolutely.
I would
assume. Dave, there were no paved streets. They were all in mud if it had rained. Dust flying everywhere. They were wooden frame businesses and structures. Imagine our city, and most folks will kind of find these names familiar, and some may know them very well if they work downtown or deliver mail or are cops or firemen. But from Wood Street north to El Dorado, and between Franklin and Church Street, really, was that small little rectangle was Decatur. Those were the city limits in 1856. But there were homes, there were businesses right in the downtown. There was an old square where we called it and still call it Lincoln Square.
Yeah,
those locations existed, but there were board sidewalks, just like in the Gunsmoke days on TV, as we remember, and horseback riders, buggies, wagons coming into town to get supplies from the county, the rural areas.
Yeah, it's amazing to think of Decatur like that.
Isn't it?
160-some years ago. Now, the police department itself, or the marshal back in those days, coming up through the turn of the century,
right,
were political appointees, weren't they?
Absolutely. Well, initially, they were elected. They were elected city officials. The marshal's office was one that was campaigned for, and majority vote got the marshal elected. And that continued until about the 1880s. And at that point, it was decided that, and by that time they had five or six, seven men on the police department. And they decided that, the marshal was appointing his friends or
nephews.
Whoever. Yeah, nephews.
Nepotism.
Yeah, brothers, and so on and so forth, onto the department. And they decided that perhaps that left the marshal as an independent figure in the city government. The city fathers, the aldermen that had been elected, they wanted some control over how the city was policed, because the public complained to them. And, how do we get that? Well, then they decided that the marshal would no longer be an elected official. They changed the city charter so that he became appointed by the mayor on a majority confirmation vote from the aldermen.
And they did that annually.
Yes.
Every year. And then that marshal or police chief picked his department every year.
And Dave, this went on. This practice went on until civil service came about in 1936.
Wow.
So all the way from 1856 to 1880s, he was elected. From the 1880s up to 1936, it was a mayoral nomination with council confirmation for who the police chief was. And each officer had to be individually nominated by the mayor and annually and the council to approve them by majority vote. And it was not until civil service protection came that it became a position that you applied for, you tested for. Based on your combined scores, then you were either hired or you weren't.
Right. Well, I noticed, too, that, if a Republican was the chief, he brought his people in.
Yeah.
And the next year, if a Democrat was chief, the whole police department changed.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
entire crew, all seven or eight of them.
And some folks, it was like a zipper. Their uniform should have been on a zipper because they would get fired this week. And the next week, there'd be an election, and a new mayor would come in, and they got rehired right off the bat, and they were back in uniform, and it was incredible.
Now, Mark, I've had some people even ask me about this. I know your book covers the advent of the telephone indicator and electricity.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about the light towers that were put up in town. This is a great story to listen to.
Well, as the city expanded, of course, it had a nightlife. And people didn't, like we do today, they wanted to go out to dinner after work. They wanted to maybe go to a saloon and have a drink or two. And so the city had a nightlife. And there were gas lamps on street corners. just on poles. And the city had an official, the lamplighter, who went around every evening to turn the little valve on the gas lamp and put his wick to it and light it. And then by dawn, he was up again going around turning off all the lamps.
Wow.
And this was a paid position. Well, the city fathers had heard about the electrical system, and the first electricity came to store front window lights, Dave. They were decorations.
To attract us like moths.
Yes, indeed, because people were downtown. But, of course, once it got dark, treachery came out. There was still a belief to a certain extent that the cold night air would cause the flu and colds and so on and so forth. And so everybody was kind of afraid. But the light seemed to dim that, no pun intended, dim that fear and gave people freedom. So at any rate, the city fathers went to Danville because Danville actually had electric street lighting. And they visited there and came back very impressed with how much it had enhanced the downtown and even the residential streets. So a plan was worked out by the Jenny Electric Light Company at that time that they would build a power plant close to the waterworks, which is where we remember the health department, which became the city waterworks.
Yeah, eventually.
Or, you know, and at the top of the hill by the dam. Now, they erected 10 125-foot tall light towers. One was actually right in the middle of Lincoln Square. Transfer House wasn't built yet. It sat right on a little mound built up, a foundation right in the middle of Lincoln Square. And on this tower and all the other nine towers strategically located around the city were five huge reflector cones with electric bulbs in them.
Kind of like at a ballpark?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, every day, because the filaments in these bulbs had to be replaced daily.
Oh, my gosh.
Rain, shine, cold, hot, sleet, ice. If they wanted light at night, that the city electrician had to climb each of these 10 towers and replace the filaments in these bulbs,
oh my,
and then move to the other side because each one of them had five bulbs, five,
my gosh,
directions with their light. Now, as in Danville, the city fathers also knew that the height of some of the buildings, and remember, Decatur's growing fast, and we're building some big buildings now. You know, they're three, four stories tall, factories and so on and so forth. So in order to keep those tall buildings from obstructing the light from the tall towers, which they did sometimes, they had to hang drop lights, what they called drop lights. And those were single bulb fixtures, much the same as our street lights today, but they would bolt them to the outside of the taller buildings so that as people walked along the sidewalk, even though the building was shading the big tower lights, there was a light directly above them on one of these drop light arms.
Now, Mark, I had also heard a story that there were lights that alerted the police officers if there was something going on in their district.
Yes. Well, yeah.
And were they on these towers?
No, they were not. Most of them were fixed outside of businesses in the downtown area. Because, listen, folks, there were no automobiles. And until the 1890s, there wasn't even a patrol wagon that the police department could use. These were footbeat officers. And even though the city limits had extended out, clear out to where Tate and Lyle is now and out to where Harristown is eventually, to the river and then on the south and clear up to beyond Pershing Road, the cops mainly had patrol beats in the downtown area, what we consider downtown now, Cerro Gordo south to Decatur Street to Broadway, they used to call it then, MLK, over to Monroe Street. And so those foot beats patrolled 24/7. And they had to have some way, if there was a call, to alert the officers on their foot beats that they had an assignment. And so blue lights were actually hung outside of businesses. There were a few poles that had them mounted on them. And so the beat officer would actually, as he wandered in and out of businesses or stood on the street, he was to keep his eye on one of those locations on his beat to see if that blue light was illuminated. And if it was, he was to run in, get on the telephone, call headquarters, and find out what was going on.
All right, I'm going to take a little break here and let you get a drink of water and catch your breath on the other side. We'll talk a little bit about what the law was like and some of the hot spots in town with Mark Barthelemy, talking about his first volume of the book, The History of the Decatur, Illinois Police Department. We'll be back right after this.
Our family has spanned the centuries and the globe. With God's grace, we started hospitals to care for the sick. We established orphanages and helped the poor. We are the largest charitable organization on the planet, bringing comfort to those in need. We educate more children than any other institution. We developed the scientific method and founded the college system. We defend the dignity of human life and uphold marriage. Guided by the Holy Spirit, we compiled the Bible. We are transformed by sacred scripture and sacred tradition, which have guided us for 2,000 years. We are the Catholic Church. With over 1 billion in our family, sharing in the sacraments and fullness of the Christian faith, Jesus started our church when he said to Peter, the first pope, "You are rock, and upon this rock I will build."